This is a lecture given at St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas. Visit our website, stdave.org.
All right, George Washington's garden. I knew about Thomas Jefferson. I'd read a lot of books about it, but I was really blown away by George Washington's garden. And here to the far left, Martha came out and talked to us. So there you go. So Washington's Mount Vernon had four gardens. The upper garden with the greenhouse, the lower garden with the kitchen garden, botanical garden, where he experimented with new plants, and also fruit. Around each one, he had boxwood and flowers, which just remember that comment that he had flowers. And he built, this is amazing, he built a dung repository to compost animal droppings and other organic waste to use in garden fertility. It's thought to be the first structure in the nation specifically designed for composting. So I just think it's interesting. You hear so much about Washington and all the great things, but do you ever hear that he was the first dung collector? I mean, I thought you've got to work that into some kind of conversation somewhere along life. And here in the middle picture, that's a well out in the middle of the garden. So the gardeners could just go and dip their buckets and get so they could water. When you read the books about early colonial history, it's really amazing to me. And both Jefferson and Washington in their correspondence, people, early American just travelers would stop in at their homes and the presidents would have to entertain them. They kept them, they housed them, and people would stay for days and they were fed three meals a day. So when you think about that, I mean, can you imagine dropping in on the Bushes or the Obamas and just saying, I'd like to look around? I found that just amazing when I, in Thomas Jefferson's diary, apparently Lafayette came and depleted his wine. So pretty good. Onward to Central Texas. Starting with the Native Americans, they utilized the plantings of the Three Sisters, crops planted together in a shared space, corn, beans, squash, and this created, of course, an area that they could grow and create nourishment. The Spanish came in and built their missions and showed diverting water and channeling it into mills for grinding corn and watering gardens. The French then came in and brought more of a formal, organized garden with alleys, fountains, and roses, all creating symmetry. And if any of you have been to the French legation, that's right here, and they're trying to restore the garden there. And they brought in some of the first roses to Texas because they were always used to their roses. But by and far, the best culture for our gardening practices came from Germany. They brought in the low walls surrounding their homes and gardens, lots of color and different species from their homeland. They love gardening. They love learning and education. And in the 1850s, they created and built the first chartered school here in Austin. Through the Texas legislature, the German Free School, which still is standing on East 10th Street. And through the Master Gardeners, I had the fun responsibility of going over and creating a kitchen garden, herb garden, that the Germans would have used. It was really interesting. In 1844, a German by the name of Ferdinand Lenheimer arrives in Texas and meets with Prince Karl of Solms-Braunfels, Germany, and the new settlement of New Braunfels was created. Lenheimer goes on to become the father of Texas botany and discovers and brings into the gardening trade many, many of the plants we still use today. Onward to today. We are still trying to finish one of the hottest summers we've ever had with drought. So we have to learn that water is very precious here in Texas. Weather is a constant change. And as a gardener, you have to be mindful of how to create your garden and how to conserve water and how to be a steward of the land. And I take that very serious, whether I'm creating a garden for someone else or I'm working in my own. I think the Indian philosophy of you're just passing through is how we all should look at land. It's not our land. We're really just holding it in our hands to pass it forward. We live in zone 8B, and we have two short growing seasons. So if you thought that we had a long growing season, you were very wrong. We have the March to May and September through November. And then we have two dormant seasons, which is December through February and June through August. This year, our first triple weather was June. Used to June, we could kind of get through with our plants. And now who knows from now on, but this year we did not. So fall is our most dependable growing season. October and November is the very best 2 months of the year to plant shrubs, trees, roses. So right now is when you should go out and be getting your plants. If you wish to plant, fall is usually longer, cooler, and better with plant color than our springs. And if you want a stunning fall garden, here are my suggestions. Late July, early August, I go out and cut everything that blooms in the fall back a third to a half. I put a little bit of compost around that I've cut. I mulch it and I go in the house and I say, I'll see you in September. And I expect my plants to do basically the same thing. You want them to quit growing. You want them just to hold on. And then when the cooler nighttime temperature, and the nighttime temperature is what triggers growth and it triggers blooms on your plants. They can take the daytime temperature a little bit better, but if those nighttime temperatures don't cool off, your tomatoes are not going to bloom. Nothing's going to bloom. That's the key.
What kind of plants do you cut back by a third and mulch? Just give us a talk about.
It's coming. The 60s will really start shooting them back up, which we should start where tonight's temperature is supposed to be 72. So it's dropping. But if you can think in our summers, our nighttime temperatures are in the 80s. Everything is just stopped. And us too. We shouldn't be out there. So you're going to cut back everything that blooms in the fall or repeat blooms. So if it bloomed in the spring and it gets a fall bloom, cut it back. Remember to water as deeply as possible to keep those roots alive. For trees, and I had a woman that was doing this summer and I couldn't stop myself. I tried, but I couldn't. She had a hose and she was watering the base of a tree. If you've watered the base of the tree, you've wasted the water. Your tree roots are at the drip line of the tree. So as the tree grows, the roots spread, and that's when your leaves start spreading out. Your roots are spreading out. Never water the base of a tree. It does nothing. Water the drip line of the tree. So those new roots that aren't hardened off will take the water up, bring it up the base of the tree, and that's how a tree grows. So the woman that was watering while I was walking Maddie, I just had to go over and say, I am so sorry, but you are wasting your water. It sometimes takes guts to be a good gardener, but I do my best in spreading the word. Just know that plants and trees, there are very few trees. A pecan tree puts down a taproot. Most roots of the tree spread out and they don't really go down deep. And that's why heavy storms pops over these huge trees. So summer usually bleaches and leaches out the nutrients of your soil. So adding a new layer of compost and mulch, and you're encouraging fall blooms. So in September, I'm out there with my shovel of compost, putting a shovel full around my stuff that I've cut back. I'm putting the mulch back around it. I water it when I can, and you're going to have fall blooms everywhere. Plants get leggy, and that's why we cut them back. So what the plants that I cut back are my Earthkind or antique roses, which are the only roses I grow because they're acclimated for our heat in Central Texas. And they've been, I'll go over that in a minute. So salvias, sages, Mexican mint marigold, chili piquin, esperanza, abelia, pentas, zinnias, everything like that needs to be cut back. And that's your fall bloom. Yes. If I'm cutting back, say the end of July, which is too late now, I cut them back about, like I said, between a half and a third. Yeah. Because you want all of those dead blooms cut off. That's the only way you're going to get new blooms. And it hurts sometimes, but just grit your teeth and do it. On roses, if you have dead stems, dead wood, now's a great time to cut all that out. Antique roses, you don't have to cut back as much as you do if you grow some of the other types of roses. That's another reason I like the antique roses. Excuse me. So this is Maggie. This is an antique rose from my garden. It was discovered by an A&M professor in a plantation in Louisiana. And he brought it in. He was one of the creators of the Antique Rose Emporium. There were a lot of roses throughout Texas, that a group of rosarians were able to roam around the country, take clippings they found, and they introduced them into the Antique Rose Emporium. And that's how the Rose Emporiums became known. And if you ever want to buy through them, I've bought online through them and had roses arrive with blooms on them. So, and they were in transit for like a week because they got lost somewhere in San Antonio. Remember that the first year of planting anything perennial, a tree, a shrub, a rose, needs to be pampered a bit. So you've got to water it pretty regularly. You've got to fertilize it on and off. You've got to give it time for those roots to establish. Then after the first year, you can cut back and you can water as you water everything else. But that first year, you've got to help the plant be established with its roots. When starting a new garden in your yard, it's all about the soil. You cannot take a $20 plant and put it in a $2 piece of soil. You'll kill it. So what you need to do, in Austin, we live in a very unique area. We have three types of soil that come together in Austin, Texas. From the east, you get the black land, the farmer soil. It's thick, it's heavy, it's gummy. And if you live over there, you've got to add stuff to open it up. Soil has to breathe. Soil can become dead, will become dead if you don't work with it just a little bit. So from the northeast around Elgin, you're bringing in the sandy loam. And from the west, it's the start of the Balcones Escarpment. And it is limestone and caliche, which is the Spanish word for ground up limestone. Caliche. Limestone. So where Mona and I live, you have about 2 inches of soil. And you said you lived in Lakeway. And that comes from the leaves dropping and mulching through time. It's not because there was soil there. There was not. My house will never move because there is a piece of limestone that we have never found the edges. My back is pretty much gone because I have, with a pick and a rock buster, created the garden that I have. So if you live in Central Austin, blessed are you because you have soil, and it's pretty good soil. Otherwise, you can have your soil tested. If you go online and look through the A&M website, you'll find how to do it. And it's a good idea because you know then what things that you can add to your soil. Vegetable growing. I love vegetable growing. I am not always the best in the West, but so fall, and I've said you have two short growing seasons. You can't start seeds for vegetables now. It's too late, except radishes and carrots. Root vegetables are more hardy because a lot of it is underneath the soil. But for your things that grow above the soil, you need to go ahead and get transplants now. So your lettuces, your spinach, your chard, all of that, go ahead and buy transplants. You do not want them in full sun. When you buy a seed packet and it says plant in full sun, it does not say plant in full Texas sun. There is a big, big difference. In Texas, we do good to get a little bit of shade in the afternoon, whether if you have trees or you can buy shade cloth. You can buy it at any nursery, and it's really good to put over if you've got a lot of sun, full day sun. Your plants will really thank you. But your lettuces, your spinach, your chard can really be grown in indirect sun and take a lot of shade. And they can be grown in pots. You just have to water them more often. And that's why I usually just put them in the ground. When I plant tomatoes, I love tomatoes. How can you not like fresh tomatoes? Love apples. I have lost tomatoes to cutworms. I don't know if any of you have. So I learned a trick. I take a little piece of aluminum foil, and as soon as I put that little plant in, I wrap the base with aluminum foil. And that helps any of the pill bugs or the cutworms from coming in and eating that plant. It'll expand when your base of your plant expands. It'll be fine. Just forget about it. The other thing I do is take a large can, like a large tomato can or something, and I put that after I've taken, of course, the top and bottom off, stick it in the ground. And for young plants in the spring, if we're having a violent storm come in, heavy winds, it keeps it from popping back and forth so much and popping off. So that's just a couple of things that I do. And then I put, of course, the tomato stand over it. And I plant. The key to having summer tomatoes is getting them in the ground as fast as you can. And that's early March. And so I put cloth, the crop cloth, cover crop cloth around them. And then if I see a big storm coming, you can just take the top of that with clothespins, clamp it shut. And if you've got hail, you can still get rain in there, but you're not going to get hail damage and kill all your plants. Okay, so now you want to go ahead and buy your tomato plants. Get them going very quickly. Different nutrients need to go into tomatoes. When you're going to put things in the ground in a vegetable garden, you want to go ahead and put your fertilizer in, any additional things that you want. You want to water it real well and let it sit for 3 or 4 days. Don't put your transplants in right after you've fertilized. Water it, let it sit, then put them in. water it again. Crop rotation is really a good thing with vegetable gardening. And I don't have the room because I have close to 40 oak trees in my yard. So I fight for sunlight. If you plant tomatoes in the same place every year, you will develop something called nematodes. And they're nasty little microorganisms that attach to the root of the tomato and they actually seal it off. So when you pull up the tomato plant, you find these big nodules. Those are nematodes. So one of the things that I found, and it was an interesting thing, instead of planting in the ground, I did straw bale gardening. You have to get organic bales, but if you see, I could plant two tomatoes per bale. Am I blocking y'all's? And you can see how well they grew. It was great. I loved it. And in between that, you could put in lettuce, you could put in flowers, whatever. If you want to do that sometime and try it, because you could put that on your sidewalk. You can put the bales anywhere. It doesn't matter. No, they're totally in the bale of hay. Organic bales of hay. Yeah. You can look around town. I know there's a place in Dripping Springs that has them. Different places, just make sure that they are organic farmers, because otherwise you're going to bring in pesticides and stuff in your bales. But it's a fun way to do it. Your kids will like it, your grandkids. It's just very interesting. But it kept my soil free for a couple of years. And then I was able to go back the third year and plant my tomatoes back in the same place. What's interesting about this is that you, when you buy the hay, and you need to go online or buy the book, for 2 weeks, you're putting organic soil, some type of compost, and watering it. For 2 weeks, you're popping it in through those bales of hay. And it works. I love things when you think it won't, and then it does. That's my shade cloth. And I put that around because I'm planting very early. Early March. Because remember, when the nighttime temperatures get above 70, those tomatoes aren't going to bloom anymore. You'll ripen the tomatoes that are already there, but new ones aren't going to form. So you have to hit the ground running. And also, if I see a big thunderstorm coming, this bottom part, it comes in huge things. You just wrap it kind of over the top and it protects it from heavy winds or hail. No, that's grass that came in that loved it. But like I said, you can add flowers, you can add lettuces, spinach. It's just a new way of thinking. Of trying it sometimes. It's kind of fun. Interesting question. And it was coming up. So when the hay bale starts dissolving, what does it become? Mulch. And so you've got an added benefit. So thank you. It is. But you could do two crops maybe out of it. If the hay bale starts to collapse, you can see that big orange strap. My husband is not artistic. He just wanted to get it done one day, and he put an orange strap around it, but it held the hay bale together, and so it wouldn't collapse. No. Mm-mm. It does. It does. There's a great book on it by the man that really came up with it, but you can go online and really get a lot of information too. The key is those 2 weeks of treating your hay bales. But it's fun to try. Hay bales? Well, we have an irrigation system, and that's in my garden as well. You could, it's not drip, but it just doesn't come up high. It stays down real low and waters at the base. If you water with a sprinkler, water early enough in the day that it has time to evaporate before the nighttime, because then you can get fungal diseases. Always water earlier rather than later. You could. You can, however you can get your water there. It you know, drip irrigation is great. Like I say, we have a system, but I had them not raise the nozzles up very far, so it basically gets the roots. We're only allowed to water twice a week. In the dead of summer, you might want to take your hose, and when you see plants lying on their side, that's pretty telling. But that's why you want better soil. Better soil holds your water better. It's all about the soil. Mulching and fertilizing. So anytime you buy a fertilizer, you know there's three numbers. The first number is nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. The first number always has to be larger. Second two numbers, smaller. There's a lot of other things that you can get nitrogen from. Alfalfa meal, blood meal, seaweed, and fish emulsion. There's a product called BioThrive. If you can find it, it's great. All good to use on plants. You just want nitrogen in there all the time. I fertilize my tomatoes about every 2 weeks. I want them up growing fast, and you have to. Because again, we don't have a long season. We have short seasons. And I think that makes people really stop and think when you realize that summer is a dormant time. Mulching maintains the breakdown of your soil and continually improves the soil. It holds water better than bare soil, and it keeps the soil at a better temperature, keeps it cooler in the summer, warmer in the winter, and it also allows the micro insects that are good for your garden underneath there to continue. If you pull up some soil and you don't see any earthworms, you've not got good soil. If you pull up that soil and it just breaks away real fast, you don't have good soil. Work on your soil. If you don't compost, you might give it a try. Mona's a good compost person. I love to compost. I put my compost from my composter on early in the spring, early in the fall. I keep all of my kitchen scraps. You know what to do. Just put them out there in that compost. Remember to water, put all your fall leaves. It is not a complicated system to compost. It's just a matter of taking them and putting them somewhere.
That's a good compost. It's just a challenge. Texas, do you use it as a mulch, and then as you water, it sort of gets nutrients in there? You don't have to always mix it into the soil, do you?
You can do whatever with it. A lot of times you can bring in heavier compost that hasn't decomposed enough. And with our sun, it's going to compost. It's going to do that within a couple of months and then bring it down. Also, after I'm through with my fall garden, you can buy something. I get mine from Natural Gardener, but I think other places may have it. It's a crop cover, excuse me. That you can throw out the seeds, leave it there in the winter. It comes up. You can buy a clover of some kind, and clover has high in nitrogen. So you leave it, and then in the early spring, you just till it with your hoe into the soil, leave it. That's a whole group of nitrogen that you're putting back into the soil. After my fall garden is finished. And really right now, I only use about half of my garden space. So as soon as my lettuces and all that start off, before winter, It's great to leave in the winter because your winter rains are going to keep it growing. It'll grow about this high, and then a lot of times it blooms. Like I say, you want a clover of some kind, and then you just put that down into your soil. It's just a real quick, easy, it's cheap to buy, real easy. You're going to push it into your soil. Just turn it over into your soil. Mm-hmm. And you've just added compost. Hmm? I'm saying nitrogen needs to be your main goal. You don't want a whole lot of the other two tied up in your soil. So look for something that's maybe a 6-1-2 or something along those lines. You always want that first number to be the highest number.
Preparing the soil, it's about the soil. It's cheap too, just get those big bags of composite manure.
Pop it in. Yep. And you don't even have to till it. You can just hoe it in. Spade it, whatever. But like I say, at the end of our summer, and this summer we had, 30 some odd days of triple digit. Oh, great. That was when I went in the house. Know that you're bleached all your nutrients pretty much out of your soil. So you want to add something to get that ground up and going. Fall, and right now, let me get my next one here. There's mulching around my tomatoes right there. And that straw that was from the year before. And then I just saved it and I pulled it around my tomato plants. And it holds that moisture in. And you see I made tomato soup and I keep all my tomato cans, and that's how I put them, is at the bottom of my plants. And it just keeps pill bugs and stuff from getting around the base of my tomatoes. And those are all of, as I said, I grow mostly heirloom tomatoes. Any questions? My bases, I've got green beans going here on the side. Green beans produce nitrogen. You don't even have to fertilize them. So where you plant green beans one year, plant your tomatoes there the next year. Great swap on those two. There's Katie the lady. My kids paid absolutely no attention to my gardening. They could care less if I knew a little bit about it. But my grandkids enjoy coming and pulling things out of my garden. And it's at least you realize that you've taught your kids that vegetables don't grow on the shelves of HEB. So that was my goal. And it is fun. And she's pulling up potatoes and carrots. Okay. I have the pool, and then it's a small area. I grow a lot of flowers in pots around anywhere I'm growing vegetables. I always put in zinnias. We grew up in Johnson City where they were zinnias. Here they're called zinnias. So whatever you call them, they are the best pollinator that you can come by. Anytime you have vegetables, make sure that you've got some pollinating flowers around it. Because if you look in your backyard and you do not have butterflies, bees, dragonflies, something is not good. So you've got to bring in those critters all the time. You want them. Squirrels follow. I do not call squirrels much of anything that's nice, but teach your children and your grandchildren about where they come from. It's somewhere in that little brain, after they turn off their computers, they'll remember that pollinators. That was my grandmother's old wash bucket. And that's the middle of my herb garden. Fall is a great time to start seeds of marigolds, zinnias, cosmos. You can also plant seeds of carrots and radishes, but all pollinators work hard to create the cycle that is growing. So if you don't see the pollinators, you've got to figure out why. Many of your pollinators like bright colors, and they like trumpet-shaped plants such as Turk's cap, trumpet vine, cross vine, verbenas, pentas. Zinnias and cosmos are loved by butterflies. Bees come swarming to indigo spirals, almond verbena, and kidneywood trees. Those all are scented things. If you have one of them in your garden, you're going to have bumblebees. If you don't have bees in your garden, plant one of those three. Kidneywood is a native little understory tree. It doesn't get very large, but it puts out a scent that you're going to smell all over your garden. And the bees come in like crazy. Kidneywood. You have to, K, just like that, K-I-D-N-E-Y-W-O-O-D. It's a small tree. It has long white blooms. I've seen it in the trade. I've seen it at, I don't know if Barton Springs Nursery might have it or a natural gardener, but call around. You can find it in the woods if you want to come out my way and just tromp in the woods. But it's a great pollinator, an almond verbena. Oh my goodness. And it will get, I have to cut mine back. It'll get 8 feet, 10 feet high. Again, it blooms. And when it blooms, you smell it all over your garden. And those are things that you can cut back a little bit and keep contained. But the smell draws in the bumblebees like magic.
Sweet potato that loved the compost pile and it put out so many roots that we went ahead and put in the garden.
Yes.
Will it grow to sweet
potato? Yeah. Haven't you grown sweet potato? Yeah. Yeah. Remember, you need to get the transplants and the seeds going because our first freeze is generally between Thanksgiving and the first week of December. You can cover things up pretty easily with newspaper, with sheets, the cloths that I have. And usually our winters, as you know, usually don't last cold spells very long. Then we get a warm spell and you will continue to produce. Herbs. I'm going to go kind of fast now. Here's my herb garden. Herbs, you have to drain them. They have to have water that drains out fast. So mine are up not very far. And Texas, you can grow all kinds of herbs. You want morning sun, not full day sun. They take some shade in the afternoon. And they're deer resistant because of the smell. Pretty much. I always like to add that. So anything that has a furry leaf or a smell, the deer prefer not to eat it. We will go with that. You can dry herbs in your oven and keep them for long months. At the end of summer, I take my basil, I chop it up, I put it in ice trays, I add olive oil to it, I freeze it, pop those out into a freezer bag, and that's what I put in my soups and stews and pasta all winter long. You can do oregano the same way. I love growing herbs, and you can grow them in pots just like everything else. You have to water them more often. Grasses. That's my side yard. It was work, but we got it. I love grasses in the with their tassels. I grow guff muley, maiden grass, Mexican feather grass, big muley, ruby crystals, pink flamingo. They all come about and grow very easily in Texas. And a lot of them have botanical names that start with Lindheimer. So they're all native. That's Mexican mint marigold, which is an herb growing with it, like tarragon. And any of your purple plants, your sages and salvias look beautiful with the yellow and all the grasses. I love growing grasses. I think that it breaks up the monotony sometimes of the same leaf. Cross vines. That's on my arbor. Any vine helps your eye in your landscaping. So many of our plants, our perennials, have the same leaf. And so you like larger and variety to make your eye stop. And that creates a better landscape. And the vertical interest of vines is a special way to do it. It's also trumpet shaped. So I have hummers in there like crazy. And it has two seasons. Most vines do have two seasons. They'll grow both in spring and fall. That's, I think, spring, but I get another color just like that in the fall. No. I don't get up on the arbor anymore because I fell and broke my femur. Mona was my savior and heard me screaming and came over and call 911, and off to the hospital we went, 3 operations. So I don't get up there and trim anything anymore. Oh, yes. They're gorgeous. They take over. You have to pull them out a lot, but I love them. I grow purple hyacinth bean, if you've grown that. It's a stunning vine, and I like to put it with morning glory. The combination is really cool. And I got that hint from Eastside Cafe. I give them credit. I saw it. I loved it. I think the best way you can compliment someone is by taking it home to your own garden. I seed them every year. Yes, you gather the seeds in the fall. I put them in a paper bag, not a plastic bag. Put them in your fridge outside, because that's my fridge. It's for my seeds. And reseed them. Easy, easy. And bougainvillea, I don't grow because it doesn't last through our winters. Some people do, and they put them in, and they're gorgeous. A little bit further south in San Antonio, you don't have to bring them in. I don't pamper anything. My theory is, if you want to grow for me, you have to be worth your weight. I grow bay trees. I have a huge bay tree. And a lot of things freeze back, but then it'll come back, and the bay tree does. But 2 years ago, I lost a lot of stuff. And like I say, Mona and I live west of town. We're about 2 degrees cooler than central Austin. And it's just enough cooler sometimes that it'll kill a few things off. I lost a 30-foot Mexican olive tree that just killed my soul. But such is the gardener life. The western part of Austin also grows 3 types of, am I about through, Mona? Okay. About 3 types of beautiful yellow flowers. I'm going to skip on over. I have a blessing. Dear God, I thank you for autumn blessings, for pumpkins, gourds, little kids in Halloween costumes, fall wreaths, crisp apples, sweaters, all kinds of salvias and sages, Mexican mint marigold, red oaks, football, soups, mums, flame leaf sumac, the Texas Hill Country, falling leaves, pecans, comfort food, windows open with fresh autumn air, Halloween ghost stories, pumpkin bread, fall asters, chili dogs while watching football games, and lovely fall rain. Thank you. Happy fall gardening.
You can find more lectures and sermons on iTunes by searching for St. David's Episcopal Church in Austin, Texas, or visit our website at saintdave.org and click on the podcast button.